I think a lot of those conversations were really helpful, and really just honored to have won.
Hi there, it's WAMC News Director Ian Pickus, and on this episode of the WAMC News Podcast, as a new president takes office, so does a new member of Congress from upstate New York. Well, Democrat Josh Riley faced Republican Mark Molinaro in the past two election cycles in New York's 19th House District, and they were two of the closest races and the most expensive in the nation. The first time, Molinaro won. But in November, Josh Riley narrowly unseated his Republican foe. Now, Riley is getting settled in a Congress where Democrats are in the minority and President Trump is back in town. I had an extended conversation with Riley, our first since the election.
Well, first of all, I'm just so honored and humbled to have been elected and to have the opportunity to do work on behalf of upstate New York. I think, you know, it was a hard-fought election. At the end of the day, I think voters are looking for real solutions to strengthen the middle class and secure the border, make sure women have the right to make their own health care decisions. Those are the things we focused our campaign on. And I spent a lot of time as a Democrat in the reddest parts of our district. I tried to show up everywhere possible, and you know, I would always seek out folks in red MAGA hats and introduce myself as a Democrat who comes from a Republican family and frankly thinks all of the politicians in both political parties are kind of screwing up a bit too much. And so I think a lot of those conversations were really helpful, and really just honored to have won.
How will you make sure you don't fall into that trap you've identified?
Yeah, I mean, part of it, I think, is just having lots of conversations with my constituents. I mean, just in this last week here, I've got a bunch of my friends from high school. We've been staying in touch with each other on the same chat for the last, I don't know, 10, 15, 20 years. And I just check in with them. It's Democrats, it's Republicans, it's independents, and say, hey, what's common sense on this issue? I think those are the types of conversations most upstate New Yorkers have every day when they're at the kitchen table. We don't really look at things in terms of whether it's a Democratic bill or a Republican bill. We look at it and say, is that common sense? Is that going to help upstate New York? If it does, I'm going to support it. And if it's harmful, I'm going to be one of the people fighting it.
So was it bittersweet at all with your victory coming the same night that nationally your party really took a shellacking, more or less? I mean, you will be in the minority in the House and the Senate, lost the White House. It was not a great night for the Democratic Party.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really look at a lot of this stuff through the lens of partisanship and what's good for Democrats and what's good for Republicans and so forth. The way I look at it is our voters in our district sent me here to do work to bring back jobs and start making things in America again, to secure the border. And voters across the country sent a Republican House, and they sent President Trump back to Washington. And so what that means for me is not, you know, whether it's good or bad, it's what it is. And we need to be able to work across the aisle and try to find common ground where we can. It also means I'm going to be in a position where I need to fight back against things that the incoming administration would do that would be harmful to upstate New York.
And what are your expectations for what those are?
Well, it depends. We'll see. You know, one of the things that's being negotiated now, as you know, is a tax bill. If that tax bill comes back and it lifts the salt cap and it includes tax cuts for the middle class, including things that the incoming president talked about on the campaign trail, cutting taxes for seniors who are dependent on Social Security. I think they do deserve a tax cut. He talked about cutting the tax on tips. I think that would be a really great tax cut for the middle class. Those sorts of things I would support. But if what they want to do is come in and do what they've done in the past, which is just give a bunch of tax cuts to billionaires and big corporations that are shipping jobs overseas, that doesn't help upstate New Yorkers. It helps the donor class.
So let me ask you this. You know, as we speak, you do not have your committee assignments yet. What are you hoping for?
Yeah, so I'm approaching this question just like The way I approach every bill and every decision here, which is what's going to be best for upstate New York. And so for me, I've asked to be on two committees. One is agriculture. We have a ton of small family farmers across the district who have just been getting screwed over the last 20, 30 years because these big ag monopolies come in with their corporate PACs and their armies of lobbyists, and they buy up a bunch of politicians, and they then turn around and write legislation that squeezes our small family farmers and helps the big ag monopolies just get more power. All of that's got to change. It's a big part of the reason why I don't take corporate PAC money. And I'm going to ask for a seat at the table as we do the farm bill so that our small family farms have a voice for once. I also asked to be on the Science and Technology Committee. We have some incredible investments under the CHIPS and Science Act that are coming home, and we have to make sure that we're creating good manufacturing jobs in America again and in upstate New York again instead of depending on China. So that committee does a lot of bipartisan work on that front, and something I'd be eager to be part of.
The farm bill was actually a failure of the last Congress. So there was not a full farm bill agreed to before the end of the term. Do you think that will be different this time?
Boy, I sure hope so. And I'm going to work like hell to make sure we get a farm bill done. And not just a farm bill, but a farm bill that actually works for small family farms, actually works for families to bring down grocery costs. I mean, it's one of the most corrupt things in our government over the last 10, 20, 30, 40 years, the way food policy and agricultural policy has been done in this country. We have these massive, massive farm conglomerates that are gobbling each other up and just absolutely destroying our small family farms. And as they get more and more powerful, they become more and more profitable. And as they become more and more profitable, they just funnel money into the pockets of these politicians who then continue this vicious cycle. So it's absolutely got to change. It's a question about fixing our campaign finance system, fixing our agriculture policy in this country, and being able to do a farm bill would be a huge opportunity to do that.
Now, you said you're also interested in being on science and technology and mentioned the CHIPS Act. The House Speaker, Mike Johnson, was in upstate New York during the end of the campaign, and he had to walk back the way he answered a question about the future of the CHIPS Act, saying before he walked it back that Republicans might be interested in scrapping it. So are you confident that whether you're on that committee or not, as it works out, that the CHIPS Act is the law of the land and here to stay?
Yeah, I'm going to do everything I possibly can to make sure that's the case. Between the chip fab that's coming in Clay, New York, which is just north of our district, and the chip fab that's coming in Poughkeepsie, which is just south of the district, those are huge opportunities to improve American national security by making chips here in America instead of depending on foreign supply chains. And as importantly, it's an opportunity to rebuild the middle class. I mean, these are really, really good jobs building these chip fabs and working in these chip fabs. And so it's a top priority of mine to make sure that those investments continue and that they're not cut.
I have 1 minute for a couple housekeeping things. How did you do in the office lottery?
I actually did pretty well. There's about 60, 63 of us in my freshman class. I got to pick seventh. So I'm happy with an office that has a window that looks out onto a construction site, including
progress.
It's great though for me because my 4-year-old loves coming and looking at the construction vehicles. So we landed right where we were supposed to. I also told folks, and probably should not have said this, but I would have been happy, in a windowless basement office at this point. I'm just here to do the work and just really honored to be here.
Now, do you have a plan for any sort of regular schedule of town halls back in the district or appearances, or how will you handle that part of your job?
Yeah, well, we're working on that. I want to be in D.C. as little as possible and home in the district as much as possible. I would expect to have, as soon as I can get home from votes to be able to do that and keep a really busy schedule with folks across the district.
Will you go to President-elect Trump's inauguration?
Yeah, I am planning to attend the inauguration. I'm looking forward to it. My office has an allotment of tickets, so any of your listeners who would be interested in attending as well should call my office to request those. I've been reaching out to folks across our district to invite folks to attend. I think it's a really important event, obviously, and I'm looking forward to attending it.
Speaking of which, I saw a picture of you with your hand up and your family and Speaker Johnson taking the oath. How did you get your kids matching suits?
So I will tell you, that was the highlight of this for me, was being able to have my family and my kids for swearing in. We actually took our first votes that day, and I was able to bring my 1.5-year-old and my 4.5-year-old onto the House floor to vote with me. And I will tell you, the voting, the way it works is you put a card in a machine and then you hit yes or no. And I brought my kids in and I put my card in the machine and then I let them help me vote. And my 1.5-year-old was just smashing all of the buttons. And then we left the floor, and my chief of staff said, "Josh, are you sure you voted the right way?" And it occurred to me, I actually had no idea because I had delegated it to Mateo. So I had to go back in and make sure I'd voted the way I intended to. And sure enough, I did. So Mateo's off to a pretty good start here.
So it occurs to me, sometimes members of the opposite party don't really interact too much with the House Speaker. You, of course, were voting for Hakeem Jeffries to be the Speaker of the House, along with the Democratic Party. What kind of relationship do you have or expect to have with House Speaker Johnson?
I expect to have a really good and productive relationship with him. He said he addressed the incoming freshman class and talked about the importance of civility and remembering that we're all people. There is an opportunity coming up where all of the freshmen, Democrats and Republicans, and our families will have an opportunity to spend a day or two together, and I'm really looking forward to doing that. When my kids were on the floor voting with me, Mateo, the speaker, actually came in onto the floor, and Mateo just ran right up to him, and they seemed to bond pretty quickly. And so I don't know, maybe that's a good omen for bipartisanship here in D.C., that they seem to get along pretty well.
Or maybe party affiliation skips a generation.
That might be it. Or in our household, party affiliation doesn't really matter all that much.
Okay, there's the Josh Riley we know. Well, let's talk about one of the early votes. So about 48 yeah. Democrats did vote for one of the early bills, which was named for Lake and Riley. And that is going to require the detention of migrants who commit what, you know, are relatively minor crimes, like shoplifting, that kind of thing. And how come you voted for it?
Well, I did what I said I was going to do during the campaign. I had so many voters talk to me and now constituents talk to me about their concerns with a completely broken immigration system where both Democrats and Republicans have just completely failed on this issue. And so I'm looking for proposals that are both tough and fair. If they're tough and they're fair, I'm going to support them. If they're not, then I won't. I think this bill was tough and it was fair. It's not going to solve every problem with our immigration system. There's a huge amount of work that needs to be done on this, but it's a step in the right direction. I think more broadly speaking, I really hope that Congress is able to turn its attention to sending more agents and more technology to the border. I think that's the first thing that needs to happen to solve this issue. But in terms of the bill that we voted on, what was that, earlier this week, it's a step in the right direction. It's bipartisan, and I think it was the right thing to do.
Critics have said that it overreaches by requiring immediate detention, and some advocates have said that, you know, that will begin a mechanism to kind of strip away due process from people who are arrested. What do you say to that line of criticism?
Look, I respect people on both sides of this bill. I think reasonable people can disagree with it. I don't share those concerns because the bill does provide for due process. It does provide for a hearing. What we're talking about here are folks, it only applies, I think it's really important for folks to understand, it only applies to people who are already in the country illegally. So if you're in the country lawfully, this bill would not apply to you. And then it only applies further to folks who have been arrested for or convicted of things like burglary, various theft charges. And basically what it says is, well, we're pending the results of your case, you're detained for that period. And so those people can't go back out onto the streets to commit other crimes in the interim.
What's your sense of immigration now as a political issue? I mean, it's quite clear that President Trump scuttled what had been a bipartisan compromise put together by the Senate about a year out from the election because he wanted to run on the issue. Now he's won and Republicans are in control. Are you optimistic that maybe some of those reforms will be revived?
I think what we need is big picture, comprehensive, bipartisan immigration reform. And so for me, what that means is a few things. First of all, let's secure the border. Let's send additional agents to the border. We shouldn't be in a situation where people can just come across the border unchecked and unvetted. We saw the consequences of that just last year when South American gang leaders turned up in my hometown. Like that should never, ever be allowed to happen. At the same time, across this country and certainly across upstate New York, we have immigrants who are working incredibly hard. They're paying their taxes. They're following the rules. They're contributing to the local economy. They're contributing to the community. And we need to make sure the immigration system that we have is fair for them and recognizes hard work. There is definitely a way to strike this balance. We've just got to get some of the political rhetoric out of it. Stop thinking of it as a partisan issue and just start thinking about it with a little bit of common sense.
Are there areas where you will draw a line with what President-elect Trump has pledged to do on immigration? You know, one thing that comes to mind is doing away with birthright citizenship, for example.
Yeah, there's absolutely places where I'm going to draw a line. There's also going to be places where I'm going to work with the other side. So with all of these, it's going to come down to looking at the details, looking at the particulars, looking at this on a case-by-case basis. But I'm not prejudging any of the bills. Just because it comes in from Democrats doesn't mean I'm going to support it. Just because it comes in from Republicans doesn't mean I'm going to oppose it. I'm going to look at every bill with an eye toward what my constituents will be best served by.
So, you know, I had to laugh. I get a lot of political emails. For a while, some of them were from you. But, you know, when you voted for Hakeem Jeffries to be Democratic leader in the first vote to set up the new House, I got an email right away from Republicans in your district saying you had already betrayed upstate New York. But for people listening, why did you support Jeffries both for Democratic leader and for speaker?
Well, a couple of things. The political emails and all the emails that come around, I know how incredibly annoying those can be. Sometimes I'll be sitting on the couch and an email will come in from my campaign and my wife will get it and she'll look at me and then she'll look at the email and she'll just hit the delete button. So I'm sorry if you're getting flooded with all of those. She'll send me right to her trash box, I guess. But look, I mean, the campaign's over. It's time to look forward and start focusing on the work. The reason I voted for Hakeem Jeffries for speaker, he's a Binghamton University grad. When I voted for him, I actually gave a shout out to Binghamton University. He knows the issues that we're facing across upstate New York because he and I have talked about those. He knows how important it is for upstate New York to get a farm bill that actually works for small family farms for once. And he knows that one of my top priorities is bringing good manufacturing jobs back home. And so so I voted for him. That said, Mike Johnson won the speaker vote, and I'm eager to work with him.
Congressman Riley, question for you. You know, everyone has their friends and their foes in the Congress. Who do you see as some of your allies in the House as you try to forge, you know, some partnerships both within your party and across the aisle?
I mean, one of the most rewarding things about this first week has been meeting so many folks from all over the country on both sides of the aisle. And I think, you know, I understand that we're living in a really hyper-partisan world where, especially coming out of a campaign, but one of the things that I've been reminded of over the last week on this job is that there's a lot of folks who are here taking the same approach that I am, which is that it's less about political party and more about delivering for your district. And so I'm eager to have conversations with folks who are interested in getting a good farm bill done that works for small family farms, interested in talking to a lot of folks who care about bringing good manufacturing jobs back home. So I'm really optimistic that there's going to be lots of opportunities to work with lots of people here.
What do you make of President-elect Trump's comments about places like, you know, Greenland and Panama and the Gulf of Mexico and Canada? I'm going to ask a question that I've asked on this show about 1,000 times, which is, do we take these statements seriously now? I mean, really, he's going to be president in a couple days again and for the second time. So presumably he knows what he wants to do.
Well, I can't necessarily speak for him, but I can speak for myself. I did not come to Congress to take over Greenland. I came to Congress to lower grocery prices, get a farm bill done, and bring some manufacturing jobs home. So I really hope we get focused on those issues, because those are the issues that I think voters sent us here to work on.
So what would you say are your top priorities in terms of crafting legislation? What will we see from your office first?
Yeah, well, we talked in a prior segment about committee assignments, and so that's the starting point for me, hoping to get those committee assignments next week, hoping they put me in a position to work on ag policy across upstate New York, work on the farm bill, get that done because the last Congress failed on it, and the Science and Technology Committee, which is one of the leading places for manufacturing policy in this country. I'd say the things I'm most focused on as priorities are going to be those issues and also access to health care in our rural communities. I'm going to join the Rural Health Caucus. We have massive issues in terms of both providers being overworked and underpaid in a lot of the district across our rural communities. Patients who are having trouble accessing the care they need in an affordable way is something that I'm going to be prioritizing. And then, you know, one of the big issues from the campaign is securing the border and public safety. That's something I'll be focused on. And I'm also joining the pro-choice caucus to do everything we can, even in the minority, to restore a woman's right to make her own healthcare decisions.
Do you believe that the Republican majority in the House will put forward a national abortion ban bill?
They might. If they do, I'm going to fight like hell against it. And I think a lot of us here will fight like hell against it. I think one of the messages that voters sent as loudly and as clearly as possible in this election and in the election before that, and frankly, in every election that's been held since Roe v. Wade was overturned, is that Roe v. Wade, which gave women the right to make their own healthcare decisions, should be the law of the land. So if anybody comes forward with a proposal to ban abortion nationwide, that's a huge, huge mistake, and we're going to fight against it.
Have you determined yet where your district offices will be?
Yeah, we're working on that. So we are hoping to have, I'm hoping next week, physical locations open in both Binghamton and in the Albany area. We'll probably have additional offices coming online this quarter. And in addition to all of that, one of the things we're looking at is a mobile office operation, not unlike the one that Pat Ryan has.
Oh, he loves his van. He talks about that on this show a lot.
Yeah, well, he and I have talked about that as well, and I think it's a great way to reach folks in communities all across the district, folks who don't always necessarily have easy access to their member of Congress. We should be meeting people where they are, and so I anticipate that we will do something that's modeled off of that.
So give me an update on your call on OSHA to take another look at its proposed safety regulations for volunteer firefighters. I gather there's concern that this could discourage participation in New York. Have you heard anything back?
Yeah, so this is a huge problem across the district. It was something that was brought to my attention when I was up in northern Otsego County during the campaign. Just yesterday or the day before, there was an article in Binghamton about the volunteer and fire department and EMS in Triangle having difficulty recruiting and retaining volunteers. And to make matters worse, the Biden administration proposed regulations that would really strangle a lot of these departments. It would give them a ton of paperwork requirements and training requirements that are probably well-intentioned, but would be devastating to these volunteer fire departments. And the thing to remember, of course, is that in a lot of parts of rural America and across upstate New York, these volunteer departments are really the first, truly the first responders in a lot of communities. And so the Labor Department is holding hearings to revisit those regulations. My comments are part of the record for those hearings. I'll be following up with the Labor Department, and my hope is that they will revise them so that they're not strangling our volunteer fire departments across upstate New York.
So New York has one of the bigger congressional delegations, obviously, and part of that involves staying in touch with the governor's office for state needs. Wondering what kind of conversations you've had with Governor Hochul and how you expect to approach dealing with her office.
Yeah, well, I've been in touch with elected leaders across the state, across the district, and what I've made clear to folks is I'm here to help, and particularly with our local elected officials across our district. I've reached out to make sure folks have direct access to our office, and as issues arise, that we can be of assistance. I think as issues arise in our district, I'll be in close touch with both of our senators and our governor, and you know, we take it on an issue by issue basis.
So far, it's only been a few days. What's the coolest part about being a new member of Congress?
I think it was something we talked about in a segment earlier, being able to bring my kids with me to vote. It was really special to be able to share the moment with them. They're probably too young to understand and appreciate how much of an honor this is, but for me to be able to go on the floor with them and to have them help me vote, it was really, really special.
Have you gotten lost yet?
Oh, all the time. All the time. You just kind of, one of the things that, because there's these tunnels that go under the ground, and so you just kind of got to follow the crowds that look like they know where they're going.
So I know this is a tough question, but just in our final minute this time,
sure.
How will you measure success in this coming term? I mean, a lot of Democrats, when President Trump was in office the first time, kind of looked at themselves as a resistance, and they wanted to stop what they saw as the worst of that administration. How are you going to approach, you know, spending your first 2 years at least in the minority?
I don't see it as that tough of a question. How do we measure success in the next couple of years? Is how much are we making life better for everyday folks across our district? I mean, for decades across upstate New York, communities like the one that I grew up in have just been overlooked and sold out and left behind because politics is just so corrupt. It's dominated by special interests. Folks just don't have a voice in a lot of the important conversations. And so I came to Congress to give a voice to those communities. And I think we're successful here if after a couple of years we've made people's lives better in meaningful ways, if we've strengthened the economy so that people have good jobs and good wages and they can afford not just the groceries but a family vacation every year, if we've taken some steps to strengthen the border, if we've continued the fight to make sure that women can make their own healthcare decisions. I think success in this job is defined by the conversations folks are having at their kitchen table back home.
We've been speaking with New York Congressman Josh Riley, a Democrat from the 19th District who's just taken office. And Josh Riley, we really appreciate you coming on the show, both as a candidate and now an elected member of the House. We look forward to keeping the conversation going as the term unfolds.
Thanks so much, Ian. Really appreciate it. And to all your listeners, thanks for spending some time with us.
Okay, that does it for this episode of the WIMC News Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. Until next time, I'm Ian Pekes.